Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
We have finally made it to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. And Jim, we start with the good, and everyone loves a good bit of number crunching. Nate Silver certainly made a nice career out of it and become very popular. But you have come across in the campaign spot a very interesting chart compiled by Sean Trend that for anyone worried about whether a slight lead of right around the edge of the margin of error will hold up over the last couple weeks of a campaign for a lot of these Republicans in tight Senate races where they are up by about that number, history is on their side.
Yeah, you can go into campaign spot and find the chart itself. The really short way of describing it is he went through basically going back to 1998, presidential races, governor's races, and Senate races. So these are all statewide races. And how big a lead was and how often a candidate with that lead went on to win. And he splits it up into categories of 1 to 3 days, 4 to 6 days, 7 to 9 days, and so on, up to 21 days. And what's more, if you have a 1% lead, 2%, 3% lead, and so on. The unsurprising conclusion is if you're ahead by 4% or more anytime within the final 3 weeks of the election, your chances of winning are in the neighborhood usually of 90% or more. So it's you got a really good chance of winning. Now, 3% or less, you're now in that 70-some percent chance of winning, 60-some percent chance of winning. Sometimes even very strangely, and I noted this for yesterday was the 13-day point. Today it's the 12-day point. Oddly enough, if you were ahead by 1% yes, with 13 days to go, you only won 44% of the time. So maybe you want to be down by 1%. But when you take this chart and you apply it to the Senate races, you come out with the conclusion of a lot of things look really pretty darn good, although not quite ideal for Republicans. And I use the Real Clear Politics averages for this. Some people might, I like this poll better, I like that poll better. But remember, this one takes polling data from every pollster and just, throws it all in together. Tom Cotton, 86% of the time, somebody with a lead of his size at this point in the election wins. Cory Gardner, Dan Sullivan, 91% chance of victory. Mitch McConnell, 91% of the time, somebody with a 4-point lead or greater goes on to win. Joni Ernst is at 2.5%. Sean Trend usually rounds up that up to 3. Let's say you want to put it to 2. It's 70 to 77% chance of victory. Not quite as good, but, the odds are still in your favor. Now, you want to look, feel not so great. Greg Orman's, got an 0.8% lead there. But that's one of those weird situations in which he's got actually less likely to win. Although somehow when you go from 13 days to 12 days, all of a sudden you're, 88% of the time, a 1% lead at 12 days out ends up with victory. But a few days later, it's down to 68%. So the short version is don't put too much stock into a 1% lead. I think that's the simplest way of organizing that one. So that means in Georgia, kind of tough to say. Kay Hagan, you want to round her up. Both she and Jean Shaheen are looking pretty good. Both of them about a 70% chance projecting forward. Could Scott Brown or Tom Tillis win? Yeah, sure. Odds are probably about 1 in 3 or so. So the short version is I kind of run the numbers and basically say, all right, based on this, you end up with 50 Republican seats, 48 Democratic seats, and then 2 that probably won't be resolved on election night, because in both Louisiana and Georgia, you have to get 50% to avoid a runoff. It's almost certainly not going to happen in Louisiana, and the coverage of Georgia tends to forget about this. There were a lot of folks in the media are like, Michelle, no, it's ahead. Yay, this is fantastic. Well, yeah, but if she wins with less than 50%, it just doesn't get resolved until January. And history suggests that turnout drops off a lot in the runoff. And, in Georgia, they had a runoff in 2008, and the Republican who had a very modest lead on Election Day went on to win quite handily in the runoff. So, it's easy to see a scenario in which Republicans end up with 52 seats, Democrats 48. But, there's a reason they hold the elections. Even in these cases, there's a 1 in 10 chance that things will turn out a little bit differently.
Yes. And just as a nice kicker to the good martini, the Massachusetts governor's race, we haven't spent a lot of time on that because usually statewide races in Massachusetts aren't that competitive. But Somehow Martha Coakley always has a knack for making them competitive when she's the Democratic nominee. She was the presumptive winner easily against Scott Brown. That clearly didn't turn out to be the case in the special election to replace Ted Kennedy. Now she's been expected to win, but the polls have remained very close against Republican Charlie Baker. But now a new Boston Globe poll has Baker suddenly up 9 points, 45-36. Jim, if that poll is anywhere close to accurate, Martha Coakley has once again done a spectacular job of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
That's my choking noise. And people can see I'm making the Pete Carroll choking gesture that he did in a 1992 game. Look, you know, someone was probably going to say it's going to come back to haunt me. But, you know, it's kind of strange to see history repeat itself. Charlie Baker has kind of been a little engine that could just, you know, slow and steady wins the race. And it's kind of surprising, but he had been building and building and building. The poll indicates that independents in Massachusetts, where it's a heavily Democratic state, but what it really is that there's, you know, a decent Democratic vote, not many Republicans, but a big chunk of Massachusetts identify as independents and then, you know, often vote Democrat. But it sounds like Coakley is not doing particularly well amongst independents. They've shifted in Charlie Baker's direction. And it's quite possible that Massachusetts will have a Republican governor again. And you know what that means, Greg?
He'll be running for president at some point.
He'll be running for president in 2024 or 2028 or so. I'm kidding, as far as I know.
All right, on to the bad news. And if you've been paying attention to the news over the last 12 hours or so, you could probably guess where this was coming from. There's now an Ebola patient in New York City. This is a doctor named Craig Spencer. He had been treating Ebola patients in the West African nation of Guinea. He'd been back in the country for about a week, self-reported himself yesterday with a fever about 103. However, he had been bowling the night before, riding the subway in an Uber car and believed to be out at a restaurant, although he claims he was not symptomatic at that time. So last night, Mayor de Blasio and Governor Cuomo were saying, nobody has anything to worry about. This is going to be an isolated case, and we're pretty sure we can handle this. Everybody calm down. But, Jim, we're being told by many people we're turning the corner on a lot of these cases because we saw the nurse has been declared Ebola-free. The cameraman from NBC has been released. So just when we thought this was perhaps heading in the right direction, we've got another case here.
I don't know about you, Greg, but I think we all learned a valuable lesson with this experience. You know what that lesson is?
What's that?
Never go bowling, since the Ebola doctor went bowling. I'm kind of fascinated. This story has not included what I think is a really important detail, Greg, and that what shoe size is he? How'd you like to be the guy who got his bowling shoes right after? Oh, by the way, the preceding wearer had Ebola. Hopefully he didn't sweat too much. It is unnerving. You know. Hopefully this turns out to be an isolated case. They're saying he followed most of the protocols, that he measured his temperature, started feeling a fever and intestinal distress and went over to the doctors. I suppose that's good news. I think there are a lot of people who feel, if you've been working with Ebola patients, as this, you know, very noble doctor was, we kind of hope you kind of minimize your exposure to everyone else. Yes, we understand you're only contagious when it comes to bodily fluids, except, you know, the sneezing and stuff like, you know, you trip and fall and you cut your knee, you know, does that mean you've got blood with, you know, Ebola on the street? You know, kind of unnerving. Hopefully this turns out to be nothing, but, you know, once again, the mayor and the governor of New York are assuring us everything is fine, everything is under control, and I guess we'll spend a couple of days figuring out whether they really know what they're talking about, or they're just giving us happy talk to keep us calm.
Back to the campaign trail now for the crazy martini. And as Morning Joe actually established over the past couple of days, President Obama has spent no time campaigning for any Democratic Senate candidate, although he did tell Al Sharpton's radio show, as we explained yesterday and earlier in the week as well, that all the Democrats who are running for re-election, despite what they say on the campaign trail, are really his allies, supporters, and always vote the way he wants to. But Michelle Obama, however, has been out on the campaign trail for a few folks. She made headlines not too long ago when she referred to Iowa Democratic Senate nominee Bruce Braley as Bruce Bailey and had to be corrected. Yesterday, she was out stumping for Mark Udall in Colorado and came up with this gem.
And as a fifth-generation Coloradan, Mark understands what makes this state special. He understands the values of independence and fairness, all the things that folks here believe in.
The only problem here, of course, Jim, is that Udall is not a fifth-generation Coloradan. He was born in Arizona. Cory Gardner, the Republican congressman who is now ahead of Udall in the polls, is in fact a fifth-generation Coloradan. So it wouldn't have been that bad, of course, if she had just said fifth-generation Coloradan. And oh, by the way, he's a fighter and stands for us or something like that. But no, instead she goes on and on about why it's so critical that he's a fifth-generation Coloradan.
You know, I'm just kind of picturing somebody in the back of the room silently waving their arms and saying, no, no, stop, stop. And having said that, it is very kind of Michelle Obama to cut that ad for Cory Gardner. I agree, Mrs. Obama. It is important to elect a fifth generation. You know, Greg, do they prep her for these trips? Because it certainly seems like they don't. She goes out, gets the names wrong, gets the facts wrong. There was a White House release that said that they got Bruce Braley's name right, and then they said he was running for governor. It's just like the White House, just not paying attention. Just not, you know, whatever. I think of that big banner, vote for what's his name. You know, do you know what really matters about this guy? He's got a D after his name. That's what matters. And that's the not so subtle subtext of these speeches. And you know, we talk about lame duck status affecting the presidency and people joking that, you know, or the overt hot air they used to refer to Obama, particularly during his golfs, you know, golfing and vacations and stuff like that, that they could referring to him as the semi-retired president. Maybe Michelle Obama's phoning it in. She's ready to get out of there, ready to move on with her life, done with this, and maybe it's starting to come out of these quote-unquote endorsement events.
Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.